We're on the telephone with Kyle Althoff, who is the director of feedstock development for DuPont Danisco Cellulosic Ethanol, DDCE. The company announced this week that it has entered into an agreement to purchase a parcel of land in Nevada, Iowa, to construct what it calls the world's first commercial scale, or one of the world's first commercial scale biorefineries to produce fuel-grade ethanol from cellulose. Well, Kyle, first of all, let's talk about this announcement to locate in Nevada. And I also noted that you're going to be locating adjacent to the ethanol plant that is already there. Is there a significance to that?
Sure. The announcement, DDC really took the next step forward towards building a commercial biorefinery in Iowa. And with the purchase agreement for land, we've got it adjacent to a facility there called Lincoln Way Energy, which is a locally owned ethanol plant there. From a site standpoint, it's a good location for us to demonstrate our technology on. It's representative of the growing conditions that you could see across the Corn Belt, and it also meets the business needs for a project. So we've got some good infrastructure on site there, and we've always looked at how can we form good partnerships out there in rural America with some of the existing corn ethanol assets that are there.
Now, this would be your first, again, commercial scale plant. You have been producing cellulosic ethanol at a pre-commercial facility in Tennessee, I understand.
Yes, we have a demonstration plant that's been producing cellulosic ethanol and corn stover and corn residues now for the past 18 months or so. It's down in Von Ohr, Tennessee. And from that work, we took the technology out of the lab. We've been able to run it through equipment that's the same type of process equipment design that we'd be utilizing for the commercial facility. And so we're developing the data and technology package that we need to do the engineering for the next commercial biorefinery that we'd build. So it's really been a really strong test case being able to take different feedstocks through that facility and see the results and then adjust our parameters from there.
What feedstocks have you been testing there?
We've been looking at corn cobs and corn stock, and we've also in our labs looked at switchgrass and other residues. And so as we look to commercialize the technology, first on corn stover, and as economics the market allows, we expect to be able to leverage this technology into multiple feedstocks so that we can find the niche that works not only for what we have today in the Corn Belt, but also throughout the U.S. when you start looking at some of the other dedicated energy crops that you could focus on, such as miscanthus or sorghum.
Now, I understand you're looking at a startup on the plant 2013.
Yeah, we're looking at, from a commercial standpoint, we've got another couple of years in terms of the timeline to collect the data and pull that together into the engineering package and then actually go out, and it's a 12 to 18-month timeline to construct a facility. And so, while it seems like a couple of years out, the time is coming up quick upon us, and really what we'd like to be able to do is demonstrate the technology at a commercial scale within our first biorefinery, and then license that technology in the U.S. as well as globally so that we can see the transition from petroleum-based energy sources solely for transportation to other opportunities like using cellulosic feedstocks.
And as I understand it, you have not yet announced just how big this plant will be as far as production is concerned?
The actual production size is yet to be finalized, but the general scales of what you'd look to build these facilities is first facility most likely in the 25 million gallon year framework or up to 50 million gallons a year. The size is dependent upon infrastructure constraints that you have, as well as feedstock capacities and other other issues that have to be addressed as we look at the project construction timeline. But from a feedstock standpoint, that translates into the 25 million gallon a year facility, approximately 300,000 tons, or at a 50 million gallon a year facility, we'd be looking at about 600,000 dry tons.
Well, let's talk about feedstocks then. You are launching your Stover collection program this year?
Yeah, we did a test harvest in a couple of different locations last year in Iowa, Nebraska, and also some other states. But through that experience, we got some great feedback from the growers before the harvest and after the harvest. We worked on contracting with producers, relying primarily on custom operators to come in and bail up the Stover, and that addresses some of the challenges that we have at harvest in terms of producers' time and availability to focus their efforts on something other than grain. Most of the growers that we talked with early on said that they wanted to focus primarily on their corn harvest or soybean harvest out there in the fall. And so as we looked at how do we provide value back to farmers and also in terms of not being in their way, we looked at being able to come in and contract for the Stover and the option to take it off without adding the constraints in terms of finding the labor, having them own the machinery for that.
Are you talking any details on contracts yet, and how big of a radius will you be looking at as far as collecting Stover?
You know, a typical radius is going to be similar to what you have for an existing corn ethanol plant. So you're looking at a 30, 40-mile radius around these facilities as a standard draw area. The actual contracts, because of the fact that we won't be having a commercial facility in operation, we don't have immediate need for a significant amount of Stover, but we'll be continuing to do demonstration and research activities out there in the field this year. So we'll target a select number of acres this fall to go out and get that experience. We'll be taking out different pieces of equipment to continue to look at what are the attributes that are most important in terms of making this economical, meeting the sustainability needs that producers have, as well as meeting the quality specs that we've got from a supply chain standpoint.
Are we talking about baling of the Stover or bringing in loose? Or
the preferred option that we're looking at currently is involves a second pass system whereby you windrow and bale up the material. The bales are then stacked field edge or brought into centralized collection points within a small supply radius, so maybe within 5 miles from where that feedstock was collected. From there, it'll then be brought into a commercial biorefinery when that's up in operation. But for this year's harvest, we're looking at a number of the factors that drive cost and drive quality involving that second pass system of how do we manage some of the dirt that you can get up into these bales, how do you ensure that they store well, and so we're doing a number of different research experiments, continuation of some of the work that we've done in partnership with Iowa State again this year, and finally looking at how do we manage this from an agronomic standpoint so that we ensure that producers can incorporate this within to their management practices and also develop sustainable practices out there in the field.
Have those agronomic or environmental concerns been resolved, or are there still some issues to be dealt with?
There's been an extensive amount of work that has been done in the academic communities, including Iowa State University. Also, the USDA has done a considerable amount of research looking into what's the sustainable amount of Stover that you can remove. There's a number of factors that come into play. The primary ones are considerations that farmers typically will have was what's the nutrient impact and what's the soil erosion consideration and what's the soil organic matter that's being impacted by the stover removal. And typically what you'll see if you're harvesting stover on a flat land, your erosion potential is not something through our harvesting methods and collection rates that's going to be a constraint. The issue that comes up first would be soil organic content and how to manage that so that you can ensure that your soil is being improved while the stover is being collected.
Kyle, anything else you wanted to add to this?
No, I think the announcement on the land purchase is just one of many steps along the way to making cellulosic biofuels commercialized here within the U.S. I know it's something that's still in its infancy, but between the collaborations that we have from DuPont and Danisco, through the work that we have done with our sister company here in DuPont, Pioneer Hybrids, as well as some of the academic institutions out there like Iowa State, I think farmers should really be attuned to how this fits in long-term to the residue management strategies. And so it's something that's unique today and still in development, but we'd like to ensure that we can provide value back to the growers and see this as a more integral part of producers' operations as we look going out here in the next decade or so. We've seen average yields, or I believe average USDA yields now across the U.S. are approaching or at about 160 bushels to the acre. And in the next decade, there's projections to going up towards 200 bushels to the acre. So as you see the amount of corn grain out there increase, you're also going to typically see the amount of corn stover increase. Harvesting and collecting corn stover can help address some of those constraints that you'll see in terms of being able to manage the amount of residue back out on your fields.